Thank you so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking with you about headaches. Do you have a headache right now? That's a very common complaint, and we're going to be taking a look at headaches with our guest, Amanda Ellison. Amanda is a senior lecturer in the psychology department at Durham University, United Kingdom, and we're going to talk with her about her new book. It's a great read. It's titled Splitting, The Inside Story on Headaches. So, from migraines to stress and sinus headaches, we'll look at what causes them and maybe ways to take away the pain. And I hope you'll join in. How have headaches affected your life? We'd love to have you part of the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Ellison, welcome. Thanks for joining us today on the show.
Hello. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Larry.
So what is it about headaches that made you want to find out more about them?
Headaches are fascinating. I'm a neuroscientist, and I have been a neuroscientist for a very long time, but I'm also a physiologist, and I'm really interested in how the body gets together with the brain to bring about our behavior, and how that behavior then backs up to how our body feels and how our brain feels, and how sometimes we actually get headaches. And headaches give us a window, not just on what's actually happening inside of our heads, but also how our brains work, and also how we behave and how it is that affects our brain. And it brings it all together. It's like a window on how fascinating we are as humans.
I'm one of these people who rarely gets a headache.
Good,
almost never. I mean, I can't, I don't even know if I have a bottle of aspirin in the medicine cabinet. Are there other people like me around?
We call you the anointed. So there are a few of you around. And that's really interesting as well, because people who don't experience pain are really interesting. Now, pain's really important for us. I presume, Larry, you've felt pain in other parts of your body.
Oh, yes.
So pain is there as a warning signal. So if, for example, you tear a muscle when you're playing sports or something like that, it actually stops you from playing anymore. And the reason why that is because you need to heal that injury. And so pain is there to tell you, hang on, there's something not quite right here. You need to take it easy. You need to heal. So pain as a why we have it, as an evolutionary concept, it's really, really important for us. And headache is no different. The only difference with headache is that it's really early. It's a really early warning signal. It doesn't wait for the injury to happen. Because if the injury happens, then that means you've hurt your brain. And your brain is the most important organ of your body. And that's why you need a really early warning signal. And that's what we experience as headache.
All right, well, let's look at the brain for a minute. What happens in the brain when we get a headache?
In most headaches, Larry, they're all to do with the blood vessels around your brain. So that's where the pain comes from. The pain comes from those blood vessels when they widen too much, when they get bigger. And that may happen because more blood needs to be brought to the brain, or it may happen because you have inflammation happening because you're stressed, or because you have a virus or something like that. Any of your listeners who experienced COVID may have had a headache because of that. And it's to do with that all around inflammation that you get when you're fighting off a bug. It's very immune system based. Lots and lots of reasons as to why we experience it. But in the end, they are all the same. The pain comes from that widening of the blood vessels. Why is that important? Well, those blood vessels are kept separate to your actual brain tissue. Your brain tissue actually feels no pain. So if you happen to come across somebody on the street who has a big hole in their head and you can actually touch their brain tissue, they won't feel you touching their brain tissue. They might wonder why you're not calling an ambulance instead, but they won't be actually able to feel you touching their brain tissue. There are no pain receptors in the brain. The pain comes from these little sensory receptors that are embedded in your blood vessels that are all around your brain. They're kept separate to your brain because blood is toxic to your brain, very toxic to your brain. So we have the blood-brain barrier. And that's really important to understand, that that your vascular system, the blood system to your brain, your cerebrovascular system is kept separate to the brain as we know it. Now, that means that we have these sensory receptors inside of our blood vessels, so that if they start to widen and if those blood vessels aren't comfortable anymore, then those sensory receptors send off signals to our brain saying, hang on a minute, I'm not quite right. I'm not quite right. And we interpret that as pain. And it's there to slow us down, to stop that from happening. Because if those blood vessels burst, then that's what we know as hemorrhage. And that is really bad for your brain.
That's really bad.
We all know as stroke. Yeah. So that's really, really bad. Now, I'm not saying that every headache leads to stroke. What I'm saying is that all of our headaches that we experience are really early warning signals that your head and your vascular system, there's something not quite right.
So when do we need to be concerned? Say we have a headache. When do you need to be kind of concerned about it?
Okay, so let's take you as a case study here, Larry. You can't remember the last time you had a headache. If you were to wake up in the morning and you had a blinding headache, you would have to take yourself to a health professional. That is not normal for you, okay? So if you experience a headache that you have never experienced before, or if that headache is the worst headache you've ever experienced in your life, you've got to get checked out. Again, your brain is the most important organ in your body. You've got to protect it. You cannot take it lightly.
So let's look at the more common reasons. I do remember one headache that I had, which was in March of 2020, when I had 1 week to shift from teaching in front of my classes to going online, and I had no idea how I was going to do it in 9 days.
Sounds very familiar.
The stress of that, I'm telling you. Yeah. So, and I imagine stress is probably one of the most common reasons we have headaches.
Yeah, it actually is, Larry. And it's a bit compound as well. So it's when we're stressed, we make bad choices as well. So we tend to miss meals. We tend to not drink as much as we should be. We live on coffee. We live on adrenaline. We live on takeaways, whatever it might be. You know, we're not cooking for ourselves right. So that all builds up into a physiological reaction that leads to headache. But in terms of emotional stress and physical stress, your brain doesn't see the difference. And lockdown was a great example of this. So we were all stressed in situ, as I call it. So some of us had to think about how to live our lives, how to do our jobs in a different way. Those of us who weren't furloughed. Then you also had existential stress, because we were thinking, where is this going to end? What's the next step? What's our country doing for us? What's our government doing? What's next? You know, and that I call that existential stress. But I also think that postural stress was a big issue as well. The number of times I was on Zoom calls with people, any video conferencing calls with people, and I saw them at really awkward angles, sitting on a sofa, trying to type, trying to look at the screen, kids screaming, everything going
on.
Dog
barking.
Exactly. Crossing the dog's leg at the back door, definitely, yeah. So lots of that was happening. And people were holding themselves in a very tense way. Now, the interesting thing about the stress headache is that the cause may be emotional, but equally it may be postural, physical. And that can be caused by just how it is that we're holding ourselves or our alignment. It can be due to an old injury. It can be due to lots of things. But eventually, our brains, we will, as people, interpret that physical stress and tension as emotional stress. And vice versa. If you are emotionally stressed, you tend to hold yourself in a very stiff way. And that causes physical stress. And it becomes a hugely vicious circle that we have to break in some way.
I was thinking about it, the whole COVID business. And I was working from home, of course, like everybody. But I kept up the thing that I always did, which was to get up in the morning and It's a 2 to 3 mile jog every morning, first thing. And then I come in and shower and change clothes, have some breakfast, and start the day. And I think that helped me.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't know where you were jogging, but certainly if you were even just out in the open air, getting light on your eyes.
Along a lake.
Yeah, lovely. And you know, there's a Japanese concept of forest bathing, and we know the trees release certain chemicals into the air that have a calming effect on our physiology. There's nothing conscious here. We don't realize that it's happening, but it does have a calming effect on our physiology. And it's that kind of thing. It's making sure that people are actually getting out, getting fresh air, getting light. Light is so important for how it is that our brains work, that people who ended up in a kind of a trap where, you know, they had childcare or caring responsibilities, and they ended up not leaving the house from one end of the day to the next. You know, those of us in more northern latitudes, we understand what that's like in the winter when, you know, you barely see your house in the daylight. But it was particularly bad during that lockdown. In the UK, we were lucky in the beginning of the first lockdown. The weather was beautiful, and we didn't have a stay-in-house order at that point. So I think people's mental health was a little bit more protected through that period.
So when we, I'm imagining that the amount of pain relievers for headaches rose during COVID, but of course they're always there. How do pain relievers work?
There's two ways that they work. The ones that you might pop, as I call it, so you might go to your pharmacy, pick up a packet of ibuprofen or acetaminophen. I know I'm not pronouncing that correctly. I can't seem to get my say it for me, Larry.
Acetaminophen.
Minophen. Emphasis on the min. We call it paracetamol, so you'll have to forgive me. But it's a lovely word. Acetaminophen is just a lovely word. And very descriptive as to the chemical structure of what it is, if I might say. But they work at the level of where the pain is being produced, or the pain signals being produced. So in the case of headaches, they would work on the blood vessels, they would decrease the inflammation, they would cause them to constrict and narrow a little bit, decrease the temperature around the area, and that's how they work. The more heavy duty painkillers, like the opioids that you've heard about in the news, no doubt, with the opioid addiction epidemic, they work at the level of the brain. So what they do is they switch off the signal to pain at the level of the brain. So whereas your acetaminophen will actually reduce the pain signals, what your codeines do, for example, and your oxycontins and your gabapentins, what they do is they switch the brain off to those signals. So, but also what I think we often forget is that medicine is all around us, right? Particularly for headaches. And also, prevention is better than cure. And we need to think about what it is about the things, the various behaviors that we can partake in order to use them as medicine. So if we think, for example, you, Larry, you are exercising, getting light, all of those kinds of things that brought you joy, they raise the level of neurochemicals called serotonin, dopamine. Serotonin is very important in mood stabilization. Dopamine, very important in reward. If you sit with a loved one and watch a funny show on television, that raises oxytocin. These are all, you know, abstract words, but what does that mean? They are actually very protective of the headache experience. And if you are experiencing a headache, they work as the brain's natural painkillers. They work just like those opioids that I was talking about. They switch the brain off to the pain signals, but they are completely natural.
Amanda Ellison, our guest today, her new book, which is a gem, you got to take a look at it. It's called Splitting, the Inside Story of Headaches. And we'll invite you to join in now. If you have questions, maybe you have dealt with one type of headache or another, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe your experience. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer here. We're talking with the author of the book, Splitting, The Inside Story of Headaches, the author Amanda Ellison, senior lecturer in the psychology department of Durham University in the UK. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. You know, Amanda, when I saw the book, at first I thought, headaches. Is this going to give me a headache to read? But in the end, I find out it's just a delightful read, and I found myself laughing, but at the same time learning an awful lot about sinus headaches and stress headaches and cluster headaches and... cluster headaches are awful. Yeah, the story you tell was Dave, I think. You have a great story about Dave in there. What else? Splitting headaches. So many great examples in her book, and she tells it in an entertaining way. If you just look at the... I looked at the back of the jacket, and I thought, oh, this is going to be fun to read. Because she says, did you know that chocolate doesn't give you a headache and may, in fact, prevent one happening? 30% of us sneeze at sunlight. You can see off a headache with an orgasm. And you shouldn't wear a striped top if your spouse gets migraines.
Absolutely not.
Now, why is that?
Divorceable offense. Divorceable offense. I don't understand why it's not in the statutes. It's terrible. This is because people who experience migraines, most of them have a very overactive visual cortex. Now, this is the part of your brain, it's at the very back, and it's the part that processes all of the visual information that's coming in through your eyes. And people who experience migraines, that area of the brain is really, really active, really active. So they've got a very low threshold for it to be active. And what that area does is it kind of decodes all of your visual scene into lines. So that's what makes it active. That's what turns it on, so to speak. So if you actually present it with a bunch of lines, then you're going to make it even more active. And the migraine headache is very special in that it starts with something akin to a brainstorm. So it's the only one of the headaches that I talk about where this happens. There's a really clear pattern of activity that happens in the brain that eventually will lead to the pain that we've talked about already through what's happening in the blood vessels. But the pain doesn't come from this initially. This can happen 2 days in advance of the pain stage. So migraines are really long experience, really.
Yeah.
So it fires off all of these nerve cells. They're going bananas. And then it sets up the migraine experience for migraines. And you may never know why it's happening. But actually, the whole thing about people who suffer from migraine is that they need to try to find their triggers. And unfortunately, it's never one thing. We have to think of it as being like a threshold. There may be a few things that you're sensitive to. And if you're exposed to those three things all in 1 week, it'll knock you over the edge. But it's about understanding what it is about you, your behavior, your environment. And if it's your spouse wearing stripy tops that's making your visual cortex go bananas, then, you know, divorce is one option. Making them walk around in a sackcloth is another option. I'm just saying.
And you do tell a story, I think it was about migraines, a little argument that a mother and son were having. The mother claimed she could tell when her son's migraine was coming on, and he was saying, well, I should know better than you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was there when that conversation happened, and it was excruciating. You know, it's one of those really socially awkward encounters that you come across. And the point that I was making, I was giving a talk to a migraine society meeting, and And it was really interesting because I'd annoyed everybody in the audience because I'd shown them a very busy pattern of like an Indian rug with lots and lots of horizontal and vertical and zigzaggy lines. And I just, there was a collective groan from the audience because obviously I'd activated all of their visual cortices at the same time. And it was not the way to win friends and influence people. Let me just tell you, I've never done it since. But another point that I was making in that particular talk was around how that episode, so we call that brainstorm. It oftentimes it results in people experiencing an aura, which is where they actually see zigzaggy lines, because that part of your brain is active. And if that part of your brain is active, it'll make you see. It's almost a hallucinatory experience. It'll make you see these zigzaggy lines, and that's a visual aura. Now, the same thing is happening in all migrainers' brains. It's just that not everybody is aware of it, okay? But this precedes the pain phase of the headache. It's the prodrome phase. And then we have the aura phase, and then we have the pain phase. But in that prodrome phase, there are ways where you can begin to realize that the headache is coming on or that the migraine has started. And one way is that you yawn a lot more, and we yawn to get the dopamine back in balance, okay? And so again, we've talked about these are neurochemicals that are out of balance in the brain that actually start the headache off. And what the headache is there for, what's happening through the brainstorm, is to get those back in balance. It's almost like self-medicating. But we try to self-medicate before that by yawning. So again, using our behaviors to allow us to boost or decrease the amount of these particular hormones in our brain, these chemicals that are really, really important for the movement of signals from one neuron to the next, one nerve cell to the next. So we might yawn a lot more, we might crave chocolate. So why is that important? Well, that's because chocolate is full of a chemical called tryptophan. And tryptophan breaks down inside of our bodies into serotonin, the mood stabilizing hormone. And that is known to be low in people who suffer from migraines. So we're actually trying to self-medicate to boost that. We might feel a bit more needy. We might feel a little bit more huggy than usual. Mm. We might be asking our partners or maybe strangers on the street for hugs because we feel the need for physical contact. And that's because we need a boost of serotonin. We also need a boost of oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone. So it's almost like in this prodrome phase, we're trying to self-medicate. And migrainers are awful at working out that like putting these behaviors together and going, oh, I know why I'm craving chocolate, I'm craving hugs, and I'm yawning a lot. It's because I may be getting on the verge of a migraine. But the people around them can sometimes tell better than they can. And that's why this mom was trying to say, I know when you're going to get a migraine, son. And the son was saying, are you crazy? It's my brain. It's my head. I think I'll know before you do, mom. And it all got very awkward. And I sided with mom and I said, no, she has you. She has you banged to rights.
Amanda Ellison, our guest, her book is called Splitting, The Inside Story of Headaches. A number of people online with questions or comments, so let's go to the phones. May in Green Bay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Speaking of mother and son, my son is 21, and for the last 5 years or so, we've kind of narrowed it down that when he like has a really impactful workout, not necessarily impactful, but if he goes running or plays basketball, and it's not every time, every once in a while, he'll have a really bad headache that causes him to oftentimes throw up. And it seems that the only kind of cure is for him to take like a very long nap. So I'm just curious if your guest has any insight on that, if there's something that he could do to warm up or to cool down, if it's like a blood pressure issue, and if she has any insight on how he could help prevent that.
Sure. May,
besides
thanks.
Not working out.
Yeah, thank you for calling. What do you think,
that's
Amanda?
Really interesting, May. Really interesting, May. Really, really interesting. I think that you're doing the right things. You're keeping an eye on what's happening and you're trying to work out what the triggers are. I wonder if you have kept a note of when it is in the day that he is doing his workouts, because it may be linked to that. Our circadian rhythm, where we are in terms of our alertness in our bodies and what our blood pressure is, very much linked to natural ups and downs during the day. And that's, we talked about light before, it's very entrained by light, which is why when we change time zones, we're physically very knocked out, because our bodies need to be entrained by the light that surrounds us. So long story short, it's really the next thing that you need to do is to investigate, is it more likely to happen when he has a game or when he works out in the evening, as opposed to perhaps in the morning? Everybody's circadian rhythm is different. You're right, it's probably a blood pressure issue. The reason why he throws up is because when the blood flow to the brain, which obviously you need quite a lot of when you're working out, because you have to do a lot of things like coordination and things like that. Your brain is working very, very hard, but also your blood system is working really hard. Your vascular system is working really hard, because you need to have the right nutrients going to the right muscles, or else you're going to get injured if you don't have enough oxygen and nutrients going to the right muscles. So the important thing to think about is the reason why you feel sick. Sorry to finish that thought. The reason why you feel sick is because all of that kind of activity and where his blood is going in absence of going to other places, because we only have a certain amount of blood. We need to apportion it correctly. And it may be because it's a vascular issue, both between the feedback of his body and his brain. It's possibly less likely, although it's very hard to tell, as to whether or not that's something that's related to a more migrainous presentation, because we know that people who suffer from migraines often vomit, and that's because of the brainstorm that's happening inside of their heads. So it's probably more likely to be a blood pressure issue. We talked about how blood changes in the dilation and how wide the blood vessels are to the brain and the head. We lose a lot of heat from our head, so that's obviously where the blood goes, because we need to lose a lot of heat when we're exercising. It may be that, but it's probably linked to the time of day. That would be really interesting. And we know that actually for certain things like blood pressure medication, we have to take less of it if we take it at the correct time of day. So we need to know those peaks and troughs. And it's different for everybody. So probably worth keeping an eye on that aspect of it, May.
May, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Travis in Waukesha, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Travis.
How's it going, guys? Hey, thanks so much for this opportunity, first of all. So I kind of had a two-faced question. The first one was, I've noticed, which is kind of weird for me, I feel like, but I've noticed I've been able to, like, not prevent, but I can stop a headache by not thinking about it. As odd as that sounds, like, whenever I'm like, oh, God, this headache hurts so bad, ow, 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 it, like, gets worse. But if I kind of distract myself and, you know, think about things that have nothing to do with pain or headaches or anything like that, within, like, 10 or 15 minutes, that headache is just all but gone away.
Huh. So he... Sounds like Travis ignores it or does a kind of a self-medication.
Travis, that's amazing. Well done, you. That's fantastic. What you are doing there is you are gating your pain. And that's a very technical term, but actually it makes sense. I'm going to explain it to you in another way. If you bang your shin off the leg of your bed, what do you do? Well, after saying ow, you'll rub it better, won't you? You'll actually use your hand and you'll rub it better. And the reason why that works is because you are sending a somatosensory signal to your brain. So your brain will feel your hand rubbing your shin. And it can only listen to either the pain signal or the hand rubbing your shin.
Oh.
It can listen to one or the other, right? So that's why then when you rub it better, it means that actually you don't feel the pain anymore. And you're doing something like that, Travis, because you're amazing. And what you're actually doing is doing something that's a little bit more centralized. So you're distracting yourself from the pain. So you're gating the pain actually very high up at the level of your brainstem. Now, dentists know this. So they know that if you're in the dental chair and they are doing all sorts of unspeakable things inside of your mouth, and you just want every single shot of Novocaine going, they know that if they have a television that you can see and you can divert your attention to that television, they need to use less Novocaine. And that's what you are doing. You are distracting yourself from the pain. Your ability to do that, Travis, is probably linked to your own concentration of endorphins, which are your own natural painkillers. So it actually gives you an ability to take your attention and distract it somewhere else and actually stop yourself from feeling the pain. Well done, you.
Yeah, well done for sure, Travis. You mentioned the dentist office. Thinking of my own dentist office, when I go back in the chair, where they lean me back in the chair, I look at the ceiling, and they have on the ceiling a nice picture of trees and the kind of the sun
fabulous
coming through, and
fabulous,
very relaxing. And so
that's great. That's great. I won't even tell you what I can see on the ceiling of my dentist's, but it looks very suspect, and it's brown.
Well, you could you should tell your dentist about my dentist. That's what you should do.
I will.
Chris and Nina, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Yes, thank you for the call, Amanda. Look forward to your book. My situation, 56 years old. 11 years ago, like a light switch, a headache came on, and I've had it ever since, 24/7. I go to sleep with it. I wake up with my first thought in the morning. It clouds my cognitive abilities. I even dream not you being able to think properly. It's a fairly low-grade headache, constantly there. Prior to that 11 years ago, I was an avid runner, good lifestyle choices. I think maybe my endorphins might be an issue. Maybe my spikes in my head of pain from time to time might be an issue. I think it's my nerve now. But I went to Frederick Medical College here in Wisconsin. Those in the VA and others for 3 years trying to find out what the source of these headaches were. Dozens upon dozens of doctors. At the beginning, they told me it's just primary pain. We don't know what causes it. And at the end, that's what they said. Through a pain management class, we went through courses of medications, different drugs, anything from acupuncture to bile, whatever they put in your face to
feedback.
So what can I do? I'm thinking about going to the doctor again and say, is it nerves?
Okay. So Chris, I'm really sorry this is happening to you. Your story is not unique, I'm afraid. The issue is that you'll have gone to your general practitioner, you'll have gone to your hospital, you'll have gone to doctors, and they'll have done consults and exams and different tests. And the main thing that they'll have been looking out for would have been damage to your brain or something happening in the vascular system of your brain, like a little bulge where it shouldn't be, like a little bulge called an aneurysm that is changing the blood flow of your brain. And that's where they end, right? If everything's normal for them, they throw their hands up and go, I don't know. And this is why, actually, I want to write this book, because you know, in the UK, and I don't know how it is for the States, but in the UK, headache is only on the curriculum of 25% of medical schools. And that's a bit scary, right?
Yeah. You know,
pain isn't much better. Pain in general is not much better. And I think the reason for that is because we've very much medicalized this, because there's a solution. And I'm using inverted commas with my fingers here. There is a solution. And that's taking a pill or killing the pain or doing something. What we need to do with you, Chris, is to think about this as a biomedical, biopsychosocial issue, if you will. There is a reason why it came on as an onset 11 years ago. It may have been something as innocuous as a virus or something like that, but it has had a legacy. And that's really interesting, because we might think about this in terms of a chronic sense, and people who suffer from chronic pain, there's a particular part of your brain that becomes more active. It's called the zona incerta. And we're only at the very beginning of understanding that with respect to how to break that cycle. And it does lead to almost like a rewiring of what's happening in your brain. And again, as you mentioned, endorphins really important in this as well. So we need to actually look at pain, not actually necessarily, and headache as well, as not just living inside of your head, It's an experience. And you live it through your life. You live it through your body. You live it through your behavior. And we need to see how all of those things add up to make the you that you are now. And the you that you are now physiologically is totally different to the you that you were yesterday. And so we need to understand the influences of everything in order to try to find a way forward. So the kinds of things that you know, that are interesting for people who suffer from headaches and how it is that they want to break that cycle. Yes, there's dietary issues. There's certain physiological issues, like, you know, you want to get your kidneys checked. You want to get your cardiac system checked. You want to make sure that your heart is okay, because there's various reasons why that might trigger off headaches as well, that we don't have time to get into right now. But it's really about looking at the whole of your life and saying, right, okay, is there anything that I can pinpoint? And it won't, again, it won't be just one thing, Chris. It will be lots and lots of things. But what you need to do is break that cycle. You need to make sure that posturally you're okay, that your alignment is okay, that you are behaving in ways that aren't perpetuating this. But ultimately, Chris, you've dealt with this for 11 years. And I'd imagine the word that you would use for yourself is tired. You're tired of it. So that kind of chronic situation actually plays with the concentration of all of those neurochemicals that I was talking about, and makes you actually more prone to headaches. Long-term use of headache medication can conversely make you, and quite idiosyncratically, make you more prone to headaches as well. You know, even if you drink 20 cups of coffee a day, then what you not drinking 20 cups of coffee a day, you might think, well, that's the healthier way forward. That will give you a headache, because that's actually constricting your blood vessels. And if you come away from caffeine and coffee and things like that, then that means that you get this rebound vasodilation, and that may be causing headaches. Lots and lots of different things will add up to make the person that you are now, Chris. And I just hope that you find a way of putting it all together to see how it is that you can break that cycle.
Chris, thank you so much. And I think your book, Amanda, would be helpful to Chris and a lot of other people. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to other callers at this point. But your book, I think, can provide a lot of help to a lot of people.
I hope so. And I did enjoy hearing that you got a giggle out of it as well. Headache is painful enough. It doesn't need to be painful to read about it. It really doesn't. It's a fascinating story. There are lots of things to find out about, not just headache, but how it is we tick and what it is about our lives that actually brings about our experience.
You'd think that, I mean, as you say in the book, you know, we can put somebody on Mars or the moon, and we've made all these advances. Why can't we zero in and just get the final answer on all of these?
I think there's, because it's not just about taking a brain and putting it into a microscope or putting it into a scanner and saying, oh, it does this. When you get a headache, all of our experiences of headaches are totally, totally different. All of the causes of headache are totally, totally different. And as an old colleague of mine used to say, we can't understand anything at all until we understand everything. And we're not quite there yet. But what we do know is that the individual differences amongst us are the drivers of how this manifests for people, not just in their experience of it, but in what causes it. And that's not taken into account in medicine. We're all about the normal in medicine, and that just doesn't help us at all. And that's how we'll change the world, when we become a lot more personalized in our approach.
Amanda, you've written a wonderful book, and it's been such a joy talking with you today. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope we have a chance to do this again. I'd love to talk with you again.
Oh, I'd love to, Larry. I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Amanda Ellison, our guest. I hope you have a chance to take a look at her book. It's titled Splitting, and the subtitle, The Inside Story of Headaches. And we just really scratched the surface here. And not only will you learn a lot, but you will have a good time learning, because she's a great writer, and she writes with a kind of wit that I really enjoy, and it made for a very pleasurable read, and I think you're going to enjoy it too. So thanks so much to her, and thanks to Dr. Apple Bodimer, who is our next guest, and we're going to switch gears a bit and talk with you about skin cancer. It's the most common type of cancer, and here we are getting into the skin cancer season kind of in Wisconsin with the sun coming out, and myself, I'll be playing golf on my birthday on Saturday, and my skin is very white right now, so I am going to be I'm going to be putting on some sunscreen. But we'll learn a whole lot more from her coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.